It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to publications such as Esquire and Smithsonian Magazine, the nation's largest whiskey distilleries are experiencing a shortage because they can't keep up with demand. How big of a problem could this really be for cocktail connoisseurs? Meredith Grelli, co-owner of Wiggle Whiskey in the Strip District, joins us now in Studio A to share some interesting insights on the problem from a local perspective. Meredith Grelli, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much for having me.
Is there really a big whiskey shortage?
So there definitely is some supply concerns in the industry.
Oh, the horror.
Right. And, you know, we've seen lots of interest locally in whiskey, and the industry itself has seen increased interest in whiskey nationwide over the past few years.
And what's behind that? Why such a big demand right now?
Well, I think there's certainly a renewed interest because of this cocktail culture that's sort of kicked back into high gear, both locally and nationally. We've seen a movement away from beer. In fact, the only segment of beer that's growing right now is craft beer. All other segments of beer are down, and those folks are moving from beer to spirits. So there's sort of this, you know, as Americans, we've sort of gone through this evolution of we were really interested in wine for a while and got very educated about wine. And then we became home brewers and became really interested in beer, and that continues. And now it feels like spirits are kind of the final frontier.
Well, I mean, but there's always been, you know, the spirits have always been a big part of American culture, of Western culture, and of the Old West.
I mean,
you know, guy walks into a bar. I mean, he's not going to order a Chardonnay, right? I mean,
right.
So there's always been demand for whiskey. Who let this happen?
How could there be a shortage now? Point?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think so. At Wiggle, we focus on rye whiskey, and rye whiskey actually paints kind of the clearest picture on how we got to this point in the industry. So it's helpful to understand how whiskey was made historically versus how the industry operates now to get a sense of how this could happen.
Okay.
So historically, Pittsburgh, of course, made rye whiskey. We were, in fact, the nation's capital of whiskey in the 1700s and 1800s.
Now, and keep that thought in mind. I don't want to interrupt your thought process here, but I think it's probably important at this juncture to clarify, what is the difference between regular whiskey, rye whiskey, and scotch and bourbon?
Sure.
Those are the big four right there.
Yeah. So all whiskey is made from grain, and whiskey is the big umbrella, right? That's the category. And then all those other kinds of whiskeys that you named are just types of whiskey. So rye whiskey simply means that the whiskey is made with 51% or more rye grain. Wheat whiskey means it's made with 51% or more wheat. Bourbon means it's made with 51% or more corn. Scotch is made with malted barley, and there are a few other differences with Scottish whiskeys as well.
Good to know.
Yeah. So Pittsburgh, though, we were famous for rye whiskey. We made what was called Monongahela rye whiskey in the 1700s and 1800s, really up until Prohibition, in fact. And at the height of whiskey making here in western Pennsylvania, there were 4,000 licensed whiskey stills. 4,000. A big number, right? Today there is one whiskey still in western Pennsylvania, and that's our still in the Strip District. So we're in a very different landscape now, right?
I should say so.
So at this time when we were making the country's whiskey, we were making actually half a barrel of rye whiskey for every man, woman, and child in America. Now if you fast forward to today, if you walk into a great Pennsylvania state store, like the most premium store, wherever, you know, closest to where you live, that has the best selection of rye whiskey, you have several options of ryes, right? In fact, what looks like several options is not. So there are, at this point, two distilleries in the U.S. that produced 84% of the rye whiskey that was sold in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so when you're saying there's all these different kinds of rye, they're coming from two different sources. Okay.
You got it. So there are two major distillers of rye whiskey in America right now. The first is a distillery that you're familiar with. It's Beam. They bottle a few different brands of rye whiskey. They
distill. As in Jim Beam.
You got it.
I might have heard of them.
You've heard, yes. Yeah. They're a wee player in the industry, but their name's getting around.
Yeah.
The second distillery is even more interesting, actually, because you likely haven't heard of them. Their name is Midwest Grain Products. They're in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and they are the largest distillery in the United States. They produced almost half of the rye whiskey that Pennsylvania consumed last year. And you've never heard of them, right?
What label do they have?
They supply their whiskey to dozens of labels. So these are bottlers who take this MGP rye, rebottle it under their own brand. So the most well-known brand that uses MGP rye is Bulleit, which is available in a lot of Pennsylvania state stores, right? So we've gone from an industry that was very decentralized to one that's very consolidated, right? Mm. And that means that you're relying on two distilleries to make the forecasting call for what Americans are going to want in rye whiskey. And the tricky part about whiskey, of course, is that there's a huge lag. It's not as if you can see this demand coming even 2 years out and prepare for it, because so much of this whiskey sits in barrels for so long. So if, you know, one of these two forecasting departments makes a bad call, doesn't project demand accurately, you have a whole country that's out of whiskey.
Wow. Who would have thought that was even possible in America? But evidently it is. Meredith Grelli is co-owner of Wiggle Whiskey in the Strip District, joining us here in Studio A to talk about, among other things, the great whiskey shortage. And before we move on from rye, you were talking earlier about how beer sales have gone down, and that the beers that the growth area is in the craft beers.
Yeah.
There is, in spite of these two entities you just talked about, who produce all of the, who are producing all of the
84%,
84% of the whiskey. As far as rye goes, have you ever heard of Templeton Rye?
That's MGP.
Oh, it is. Okay. So there isn't even like a little guy out there.
There's a great marketer.
Okay. For this bridge we're talking about, for Templeton Rye?
Yeah.
Because it's based on, all right, now you can correct a myth here, perhaps. I was living in the Midwest, and where you can buy it. I don't think you can buy it out here, can you?
No,
it doesn't get out this way.
It's not distributed in
Pennsylvania. Right, and it's based on an old recipe that was, you know, going back to Prohibition, and farmers would make it because they were going broke. They couldn't, it was the dirty 30s.
Yeah.
And then the crops weren't growing, and it was the Depression, and everybody was broke. So they're like, okay, we'll make some whiskey because it's illegal, and apparently the mobsters were really into buying it up. It was in Templeton, Iowa. It was a secret recipe that only a few people know of. So
that's really great marketing, right?
Right.
But it turns out,
is that not true?
They are buying rye whiskey from MGP. Their recipe is 95% rye whiskey, 5% malted barley. As far as any spirits writer can tell, it's the same as most of the other.
Are you saying
MGP
they made all
rice.
That up?
Well, it's a great story, right? And they're drawing on a great story. But, I can tell you that.
You don't seem to want to come right out and say it's not
true. Well, I don't want to. So I'm on. There's a newly formed industry group called the American Craft Distillers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the ethics committee of that trade organization. And there are a handful of us craft distillers across the country who are trying to develop sort of a code of ethics for craft distilleries because of this very issue. There isn't any entity right now that holds distilleries to a truth in labeling.
So therefore, you can make up this, you can create a myth and sell this stuff for $50 a bottle, which it was selling for in some places.
Mm-hmm.
And so if in the future, going forward, if there's a Monongahela rye or whiskey that you want to market, there better be a story, and there's a special recipe. It better be based on an actual recipe from long ago.
Yeah, well, so what we like to say, you know, we set up our distillery in the Strip District as an educational space. Our goal is to get people in the door and to show them exactly how we make what we make. And our hope is, you know, our number one sort of mission statement is that the more educated and engaged consumers are, the better off we all are, right? We're going to drink better things, and people can start asking harder questions of all the bottles that they're buying on shelf. So just like you see, saw in craft beer, this evolution over the last, 20 or 30 years, this desire for consumer information and understanding, and you're seeing the same thing starting in spirits. Consumers, I think, are going to be less likely, less inclined to just sort of believe what they read on a label, and they're going to be more likely to start asking questions about how it's actually made, whether it's a continuous still or a pot still, where the grain comes from, all that kind of good stuff.
So is it true that as demand for whiskey goes up, quality goes down?
So I would say, it depends on the distillery, right? So there's been movements like, Maker's Mark got in trouble last year when they tried to dilute down their whiskey to meet demand. And I can tell you, one of the distributors of that MGP whiskey, we received an email from them just the other day that suggested that distilleries should start adding unaged or less aged whiskey to their aged whiskey to stretch it out, and they were offering to sell that kind of whiskey to folks. So there's definitely, an impulse, I think, in the industry to meet demand. I would, reassure everyone that at Wiggle, we ran out of rye grain, organic rye grain, already this year. We bought all the rye grain we could from our region. And so instead of sort of playing any of those tricks, we decided to start playing with other organic grains that we could get. So we started making an heirloom organic Wapsie Valley corn whiskey, our sort of own version of bourbon, because we were able to find that grain. So instead of trying to stretch what we already have, we've just done what historically distillers always did. They just adapted and worked with different grains.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking whiskey with Meredith Grelli, co-owner of Wiggle Whiskey. You've opened a new barrel house on the north side. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, our opening party is actually tonight, and we're thrilled. We ran out of space at our distillery in the Strip District for barrels. We have about 560 barrels storing whiskey right now. So we needed another home for all of those barrels. So we found a spot in Deutschtown Spring Garden on the north side. We'll be doing tours there every Saturday. And we also bought two vacant lots next to the building, and we've turned that into the country's first whiskey garden. So you might be familiar with the idea of a beer garden. We're bringing cocktails to the fold here in our whiskey garden. And we've begun planting the perimeter of the garden with botanicals that we use in our products so that everyone can get up close and personal with what they're drinking.
And I understand that you're exploring Pittsburgh's connection to whiskey pre-Whiskey Rebellion.
So actually at the barrel house, so at the distillery, we talk through the Whiskey Rebellion history. That's our tour is half production and half Whiskey Rebellion history. At the barrel house, we're doing tours that start off where our distillery tours end. So we're taking people through the science of barrel aging, and we're talking through whiskey history post Whiskey Rebellion. And this is where some really crazy stuff happens in Pittsburgh.
Such as?
So Henry Clay Frick actually owned, he inherited from his grandfather the largest distillery in the country. It's called Old Overholt, and you might recognize that name from mm-hmm. Whiskey on Shelf. It's the brand name is owned by Jim Beam now, and it's the recipe is pretty different than the way that the Overholts actually would have been making it. So Henry Clay Frick owns this distillery. He's running it. He gets the sense that coal and coke are his future, right? And so he sells off a third of his family's distillery. He sells that third of the distillery to Judge Thomas Mellon so that he can lease his neighbor's land, because he's living, his distillery's on the Connellsville coal seam. He leases his neighbor's land and ultimately is able to then convince Andrew Carnegie to get into business with him. Now, Thomas Mellon, his son, becomes Secretary of the Treasury and Chief Prohibition Agent during Prohibition. So he's now the owner of the country's largest distillery and Chief Prohibition Agent, which is an awkward position, right?
I should say so.
So he does what any smart man, smart politician would do. He grants himself one of the few medicinal whiskey licenses.
Of course.
Yeah,
well, that's where that whole line, you know, I'm just drinking for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, that's
a
right.
lot of people were writing their own prescriptions back in those days.
So it's this wonderful story that really tells much of the history of Pittsburgh through whiskey. And I think, you know, all Pittsburghers know that Pittsburgh is, of course, a steel town. Fewer, I think, understand how much of a whiskey town it was and how whiskey really built the steel industry.
Very interesting. We have just a few seconds left, and I hate to contribute to the demands for whiskey, but since you're here with us, Wiggle always has new cocktail recipes on its website. Give us one. That's about all we have time for in about 15 seconds.
Yeah, sure. Tonight at our grand opening party of the Barrel House, we'll be serving our wheat whiskey with a strawberry balsamic vinaigrette lemon soda water. It's good stuff.
Doesn't sound like a Manhattan to me.
It's a summery, delightful drink.
Why not? Why not? So what you're saying is that you're a little experimentation going on tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Always experimenting.
Well, it's been a pleasure checking in with you, Meredith Grelli. She is a co-owner of Wiggle Whiskey in the Strip District, and they have the big grand opening tonight of the Barrel House on the north side. Thank you, Meredith.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everybody.